PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Off Course, Episode 11, The Double Ones. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Rob Miller, aka Rob Miller Time on Twitter, and I suppose you could follow me as well, at Canada and Golf. We also have Off Course THP on Twitter, and make sure when you're out there looking for something to listen to or watch, you follow our good friend Adam over at Golf Unfiltered, and check out THP's Range Days, a video discussion on irons that are available this year. Rob, that was a big intro. Welcome to episode 11, my friend.
We did it. Best hockey player ever, Mark Messier. That's what the 11 is for. And don't you forget it. I'm happy that we're watching some, you know, we always watch our live stream of PGA Tour coverage, and I'm happy that the PGA Tour is playing this week, and we're issuing in the Mackenzie Hughes era. Are you excited about that?
He is leading, and I hope it lasts a while.
Yes. That's, you know, Canada is going nuts right now. Guaranteed.
You, before this recording started, Rob was pretty sure I was going to leave at one point to wave my flag outside the house here in Ohio due to the fact that a Canadian was leading a PGA event. Now, yeah, I'm not that emotional, but I'm excited.
Fireworks and all kinds of different things, you know, like Canada goes crazy when Canadians are leading, which is great too. I mean, it's just it has a different feeling. And I actually asked a question to Adam Hadwin this week on Twitter, because I was like, I just want to know if he felt like extra pressure, but it wasn't pressure. He said more, it's like pride, because there's so few. So you know, as a professional golfer on the PGA Tour, you represent your country, and you know, there's your country's eyes are upon you. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And considering golf is really one of the few sports that is actively going right now, what else do you have to watch, really?
Yeah, I know. We're watching, there's plenty of Ches Reavie coverage. I'm not quite sure why and how that got there, but.
Well, we are getting to watch Bryson hit bombs as usual. Rory's almost making every putt, but is still quite low, and Phil's being Phil, which is good.
Yeah, I think I've seen one fairway hit in the last about, you know, 20 minutes out of that threesome. But that's a hell of a power threesome right there with Phil, Rory, and Bryson.
Rob, did you see the image on, I think it was on social or on Twitter, where DeChambeau is trying to cover the green on that 470-yard or 400-something-yard par four over the water?
I saw it early before he made it, I think.
Okay.
That was what
I think it was like a 370-yard carry to the middle of the green. And he decided after trying it numerous times that it was just, in his words, too risky.
I'll tell you, I thought he made it. And he said there was some quote that after he achieved, you know, blah, 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 ball speed, he was able to carry it, but then decided against it.
I want him to go back down to Bay Hill and take on that par five.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's hitting it so far. I remember, you know, one of the questions, and we were talking a little bit about rolling back equipment, right, last week, little for like 55 minutes. And where you said if he had a smaller driver, like 260 or whatever CCs, then would you swing out of his shoes? But I paid attention, and he just rips three wood the same way. It does not matter to him.
No, it doesn't.
I don't know if he could possibly play a relaxing round of golf. Do you think if you took away his textbooks and everything that Bryson could just go out and just, you know, shoot the crap with the friends and no big deal type of thing?
I don't think he would be bad. I think he'd be pretty fun to be around. I think some of the stories he can already tell in his young career and life would be entertaining enough that if you got him out of his yardage book, it would be really fun to participate in.
Yeah, I think it'd be a fascinating, I would feel like I was part of some sort of human trial, like, or something, to see, you know, to actually play with Bryson. But hey, I'm good with that. I think it'd be he'd be a lot more fun to play with, but I don't know if he would be I don't know if he could fully relax, is what I'm saying.
I want to give a shout out to Tyler McCumber, who's one of the late adds, the unfortunate dropouts we've seen this week. He started the round today, Rob, with a double bogey, obviously a little bit stressed out about his opportunity, and followed it up with an eagle and is now minus four on the day, I believe. So that's great stuff. Fun to watch these guys who are not particularly familiar with get their chance and really take it.
Yeah, that's a good, you know, every time there's a bad story like, you know, Chase Koepka having to drop out and so forth out of abundance of caution, then, you know, I did see that he's got an exemption for next year's. So that was cool that they offered that to him at the Travelers. But you get the, what was the guy's name? Just kidding. Since you did a shout out, we'll have to do a quick, like, stealth follow on Twitter and then just say, hey, we mentioned you in this.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're all about here.
That's it.
So, that's right. 5 minutes in, we haven't even touched on our big subject for the day, Rob, and it kind of ties into some of this DeChambeau stuff and the rolling back stuff.
Should I do the drum roll? Should I? What's our big subject?
Oh, loft jacking.
Loft jacking. Everyone's favorite subject.
Do we pause for effect?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have a cymbal uncovered here. I have a bass drum. How's that for loft?
Well, I think we've made it. We have sound effects now in the podcast. Not sure whether I love them or hate them, but we will enjoy them while you're willing to do it. But in terms of loft jacking, part of this stemmed from a post that was circulating around Twitter last week. We had hoped to put it in our last episode, but obviously ran long with our other discussion. Was a not a statistic, just a little infograph with a question. A golf brand should include the loft angle on clubs. And they believe that because comparatively, the numbers are uniquely different. Now, the example here is TaylorMade M2 versus Ping Blueprint, which obviously have a significant difference. I think it's like 3 to 4 degrees on every iron head. And it created quite a bit of discussion. I have very strong opinions about this. Rob, I'd like to get your take straight out of the gate. What's your perspective on the importance of having a loft on an iron?
As far as just not a number, but a loft, I don't give much thought to that. I really don't. Like, I'll look at the specs of what I'm using, but honestly, for me, it's try and buy type of thing. Doesn't matter if it, you know, I know what type of, you know, I know I'm not going to go into a blade iron. That's not for me. No matter how many times I get somebody that says, oh, it's just as easy to hit. You will play so much better if you get used to playing with a very unforgiving blade iron. Oh, really? That's an interesting thing. Cause like I've never heard that before. Anyway, I don't mind. I know a 7 iron from one set to another can vary wildly. You know, sometimes like two clubs, right? Two and a half clubs, I think, in the extreme thing. But I'm not going to use a Tiger pitching wedge, which is about 49 degrees in my set, because I'm just not going to benefit for it. So I think a lot of people have strong opinions about this, but when there's a lot more going on with technology than simply the loft that's on a particular iron head.
So you're talking about technology. That's a big factor here, right? But one thing that I think people are critically ignoring when they only consider the loft on an iron head is, what are the two most basic flaws or inabilities of an amateur golfer? In my opinion, one of them is not being able to get the ball high enough. And the second one is spinning the ball too much or not enough. I think in most cases, Rob, because players are traditionally fairly steep and a fade bias, especially more casual golfers, you're going to see folks who just spin the ball too much.
Well, that happens to not be my problem. So that's nothing that I go through. So I think that's one of the reasons I do like having a kind of some sort of technology packed into my iron, because I'm taking advantage of something which, you know, in the past I just kind of like, I don't know, what's the word for it? Poo-pooed it, you know? Hey, I want some sort of JDM forged iron head. I love them. I don't like a lot of offset and this and that. And I'd go out of my way. And I'm talking, you know, 15 years ago, that was my whole deal there. And ever since I started, I would say that one for me that was kind of like an eye opener were R11 irons. I remember going to a launch there and they were just fun as hell to play. I got to be honest. They might have looked like the Optimus Prime and not like the prettiest thing in the world, but you could just go out there and just bash them. And they were going far and really long. You know, I think some of my best rounds ever were with that set of irons, which were just stock. Like, I don't know what they had, KBS 90 in them or something, just kind of ridiculous. So it was kind of like an eye-opening experience. Now you're talking to someone who's a 9 handicap. So my bugaboo is greens and regulation. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. another topic. So I don't really pay attention, aside from initially purchasing the set and then making sure, like, all right, I don't have a 42.5 degree pitching wedge. Do I? Is that going to just completely screw up my other wedges? That type of stuff. Then I don't give it a second thought from that perspective.
So I have a quote that I think will really set the tone for much of our discussion. Are you ready for it?
Yes, I'm ready.
So this is coming from what I can only call an R&D OEM expert, aka a critical person.
Yeah, someone who knows more than us.
Yeah. So here it is. Irons today are going further. No question about that. The skeptic would simply point to the loft numbers getting stronger, but as an engineer, there is so much more than that going on. Personally, I wouldn't be comfortable strengthening the loft unless I'm able to counter that with other parameters to make sure the clubs hit the proper launch windows. With what we're able to do with extreme center of gravity placement to lower sweet spots, we are now able to deliver high launch angles that are significantly higher than were previously achievable from a given loft. Additionally, with the added COR and ball speed that modern irons can create, additional distance is coming simply from how fast the ball repels from the face. It's a long one, I know. Along with that, the faster the ball comes off, the higher it goes, allowing for further strengthening. In general, we want to deliver a set of clubs in which all the irons peak out at similar heights. High long irons with and lower short irons. With the modern engineering, if we didn't strengthen them, the sets would suffer.
Right. I think that makes sense. I know there's going to be people out there, regardless of what we say, and regardless of having your super double secret probation anonymous source, they're still going to say, I don't like, I have a video. I got to see if I can post it and edit it, but it's Tiger talking about Rory's clubs. Now Tiger and Rory, this is 2014. Tiger and Rory, you figure they're probably playing something that's pretty damn close in spec, right? And Tiger said that specifically when he looks at Rory's pitching wedge, to him, it looks like a 9-iron because it has like 2 degrees more loft than Tiger Woods, who has a, you know, super traditional set. So there's going to be people like that regardless, you know, of what they think. But I think that You're absolutely right. And you did range days this week with Epic Forged and you experienced this, being able to hit the shots and then go back in and really dive to the data. And I think that's a pretty telling thing of this whole argument, right?
Yeah. So range days obviously presents a ton of data during to digest afterwards. We've seen countless irons from this year's sample where the lofts are definitely stronger than others. There's no question about that. What is fascinating to me is the kind of launch that I was able to achieve without creating some other significant problems. Now, Epic Forge is a great example because I believe the six iron's like 24 degrees in the set, which is what we hit. And when you take a look at a 24 degree six iron, you'd say, okay, that thing's going to come out low. It's going to come out hot and it's going to go pretty far. Well, it did go pretty far, but my peak height with it is over 120 feet, which is well above the standard expectation. Launch angle was significant. The descent angle was significant. So you're breaking down a lot of what people would say strengthening loft would do. Mm-hmm. So they'd say it would come in too low. Well, no, I'm at 50 degrees of descent. It's definitely not coming in too low. It's not spinning enough. Well, 5,200 RPMs to spin off a six iron is probably pretty good nowadays. That's more akin to what we're seeing with a peak height of over 40 yards. That ball is not coming in low and hot. It's coming down like a pancake, or as my good buddy James said in our range of his video, like a sack of flour, and landing hard. But this is all coming from a basic, simple swing. And it's not like I'm doing something significantly different. These numbers look very close to our muscle back counterparts.
Yeah, it showed it to me. That was interesting because I looked at a few videos. We're thinking about covering this for a couple of weeks. And there's a few videos out there. I saw someone, and you saw it too. It seems like everybody that tests golf clubs on the internet has to be from the UK. Is there a reason? Are you the only US-based club tester?
It's a good question. I like their accents, so I guess that's something.
It immediately, there's just a sense of legitimacy there with that nice UK accent. But anyway, there's a guy that he had two irons. One was a four iron from one set, the equivalent, and it was a six iron from a game improvement set, right? So it was, and he hit them, and they were slightly different shafts, we'll say that, but the performance was nearly identical, which was kind of crazy. It was kind of like loft. Now this guy hits the center of face all the time. So it was a pretty decent comparison, and loft just really dictated overall distance. It was the same kind of very similar spin numbers, very similar angle of descent. The thing that I've heard is it landed like a butterfly with a broken leg. Did you ever hear that one?
No, I like that though.
That's a good one though. So I've never gone through that type of experiment because I want, not an extreme distance iron, I'd say, but I want something that is, got a lot of more the technology to help me rather than I worry about the loft, so to speak. So it's been pretty cool, like actually looking into that, because we've all seen that ever since Camilo Villegas hit his RBZ iron, four iron 227 in the air. Remember that commercial back in the day? And with the RBZs, your eight iron was probably for them, their eight iron was probably like a six iron. And I understand how people get in an uproar about that, but I also think that that's how clubs are sold. I mean, you don't sell clubs to someone who's going into a big box store by saying, look at your dispersion. Yeah, I know it's 5 yards less, but look at the dispersion. I mean, it's not sexy. Distance is sexy. So there's a whole package being put together for that. And I think it's one aspect, but I do think a lot of it has to do with the more that's sold off the shelf, because wow, I hit this so much better than my other clubs. Cause there's a lot of guys with 20 year old irons out there that, that's part of it too, but don't just discount it as like, that's the whole story.
Right. Well, when it comes down to where we are from a technological standpoint in golf, I think the most important thing to consider when you're looking at a set of irons is, do the numbers match downrange what you really want? So your launch angle is obviously important, but you want to find out peak height. You want to find out how your descent is. You want to find out spin to see if it would adequately match up to what you're looking for on the course. Now, for example, like Epic Forged, I put it over 40 yards a peak. I just looked at my Mizuno MP20 MB statistics, which we did in a separate video. and you'd expect the numbers to be different, which remarkably they're not, they're quite the same. Now, this is where the test kind of gets lessened for me, because I would more traditionally play in a player profile iron. The more important point to make here is that despite the changes in loft, it's still performing from a launch and flight perspective the way a traditional lofted iron would. And I think that's the most critical element here that folks who are sitting on the internet arguing about loft are not considering. And this is why my personal opinion on lofts is that they simply do not matter. I would be happier if companies just didn't even put it in their spec sheet. I know they have to. I know they will continue to. But I think golfers get so lost in their own head that they, even if they go out and buy like a P790 or a Speed Zone iron where they're all, you know, fairly aggressively lofted, they would have to bend them weak because it's not traditional enough for them.
Yeah, it's there's all kinds of different ways to the traditional stuff. That's pretty funny for me, because I remember I did a fitting with a bunch of members previous site down in Dallas, and they got fit and TaylorMade built clubs for them and overnighted them from the tour department, so the next day they could play around with Hank Haney, right? So this one guy gets them, he's playing like Armor, some Tommy Armor Silver Scots or something, some blades from so long ago, but he builds them himself. So I forget what he was fit into with TM, but we got him on the launch monitor. He had a crazy swing. It was very methodical up to the top, but then he just hammered it down. He said, yeah, these are good. First thing I'm going to do when I get home is I got to take them out. I got to spine them. Got to spine those shafts. Like, it's like that's what's in your head right now. Like, you're about to like tee up with like Hank Haney and all this stuff, and you're worried about spining shafts and from irons that were just built for you in the TM tour department. So there's we've got a lot of problems as golfers. I mean, in our heads.
Yeah, we have everything so built up in our heads. I remember we did an event on THP with TaylorMade back when SLDR irons came out.
Oh yeah,
and this was a big change for a lot of golfers coming out, because these ideas of strengthening lofts while not conceding launch was still very fresh back in the day. And sure, they had their issues like any other one would. And being at the forefront of that, they definitely had some marginal elements of error, but they did exactly what they said they would. They strengthened loft while maintaining that launch. And frankly, it was fun watching guys try and figure out over a weekend of golf with these new irons, seeing numbers they're not familiar with. And I think to the credit of most of them, they just kind of took it in stride, and more beneficially, I think a couple of them realized that, okay, maybe I do need a little stronger loft and I do need a regular flex shaft, or I do need this to more adequately accommodate the swing that I have.
Yeah, that's not easy to do. I mean, especially just an immediate kind of change that way. You know, we had a driver fitting once, and I think I told you there was someone that had this, it was a Wishon built driver, but it was short. It had a steel shaft, and it also had the most lead tape I've ever seen on a club. And this guy was 5'9", and he hit that ball, and it rolled at least 40 yards whenever it hit, right? But it didn't carry that long. So when it was fit into like an SLDR driver, there's no way. Do you know how different that ball flight is going to be? That was back in the days, you know, 17 degree launch at 17 degrees with 1700 RPM. And that's going to be your optimal
17. I remember that.
Everybody remembers 17, 17 yards with RBZ, I guess.
17 yards year.
They felt like 17 is, you know, we're really good at marketing 17. So they, you know, you're never going to satisfy that guy, right? Because his, you mentioned, you know, hit the windows of our super double secret probation anonymous source and hit those launch windows. That's that guy could not get used to that flight, you know? So it was just so, it was almost like disconcerting to him to see his ball going that high despite the result of it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of amazing. I mean, everyone has those little bugaboos in there. Maybe we should go. Well, you remember Score Golf used to have just loft numbers. I've heard, oh, we need loft numbers, just loft numbers on irons.
I remember that. And Hogan tried to do it for a while with their irons as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to make a comment about another company who, you know, gives the proverbial, I'm not even going to post it or make a comment because it's, I don't know. Anyways, the Cleveland UHX, the Launcher UHX from this year, mm-hmm. has both the iron number and the loft on it. And it's almost like they put it on there to wave those, wave the bird and say, you don't like our numbers? Here they are for you. Hit them first and then tell me they don't do exactly what they're supposed to, because they do.
I really like this 37 and a half. That's my favorite iron. It just sounds so weird.
Well, they're both on there, which is great.
I know. I mean, I understand it. That's good. It just, I don't know how much it really helps, but I understand the whole point.
Just so you know, over 40 yards of peak height with those as well for any of the loft jack angry listeners out there. Every single one of those irons matched an MB for peak height.
Yeah, it's not coming in like a plane making a belly landing. I mean, it doesn't do any good. So, I mean, you have to have some faith in the designers that they know what they're doing, and I believe they do. One thing that's this is probably better than anything, right? Don White, who made clubs for Jack Nicklaus, he's a master grinder. Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, Ben Crenshaw, Ola Thobel, plenty of others. He was at Scratch Golf. I think he's at National Custom Works now. And he used to have his personal set, and his personal set on the bottom just had engraved numbers. And it was basically, here's what this will go for a full shot. Here's the yardage. And I love that. I thought that was awesome. Obviously, you've got to do that for your own, based on your own personal experience. But man, that's perfect. You know, there's if you had that, like, do you put your full shot number and then put your like three quarter shot number on your irons? That'd be awesome. You know, just help you out.
Do you know anyone in your world right now that has that kind of consistency year over year that they could play a set of irons for more than, I don't know, three rounds of those numbers being viable?
Well, you have to understand that you're not going to make a perfect shot every time. No, that's for sure. But yeah, you know, you don't want those burner 2.0 flyers either. Right? Oh, I hit that right on the face and bye-bye, you know, it's right over the green type of thing.
I just think we are in such a good place from a golf technology standpoint. A lot of people still claim that it's just marketing hype, blah, blah, blah. I'm actively saying blah, blah here because I don't buy that. I think we're in a place where 1 + 1 oftentimes can equal 4 instead of 2. And I say that because all the technology that's built in, you have a club face that can propel the ball forward. You have CG that's hammered into a location that promotes things like launch and spin. You have all these things working for you. And all you need to do is go find the right set that works for your swing. So in my opinion, Rob, I think people need to just stop worrying about loft. Just absolutely have faith that there are guys with big degrees that I can hardly even pronounce from colleges I would have never got into building these irons that are doing a wonderful service to our community of golfers who need that support.
Just keep applying, Dan. You'll get into college or university, as they say.
Oh,
in Mackenzie Hughes territory.
Well, I am a bachelor's degree of not what they got.
Yeah, just I think you know what I think should determine maybe the irons that you seek out are your statistics. Like, what are you looking for, and how are you trying to improve? And I think stats help that. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do think so. I think you're right. And just PSA for everyone, just go out and hit stuff. Don't be afraid to try. You go to a demo day, they have 6 different heads. Don't just reach for the pretty one. Go hit every club with a shaft you like and define for you. Don't worry about what anyone else is saying, minus maybe the fitter. look at the numbers, look at the results. And if you're into it, take full advantage, you know, utilize some of this technology in golf right now.
Exactly. Technology is your friend.
Well, you just said stat tracking. I don't think you're talking about clubs right now. I think you have another topic you are desperate to get out.
Stat track. Well, it's not mine. Apparently there's some other people out there on the THP forum who really want to talk about stat tracking, and had a little bit of a blow up this week. And that that post was started by my buddy Stuart Goldstein out there, who basically said, hey, for those who track their stats, when you go out and say you have a ball that's barely off the green, like for all intents and purposes, I mean, there's no choice but to putt it because it's right there. And, you know, you putt it. Do you count that as a putt or do you count that as not a putt? Basically, you know, it's like if I get down in two from there, it's a one putt as opposed to two putts. And is it a green in regulation? So it seemed like everybody had the same opinion. So I came in there to ruin the party.
I'm assuming their opinion was that it was not a green in regulation.
Yeah, if it's clearly off the green, then it's a missed green and a one putt. Fine. That's the number one. That was Shane W. He said that was the first thing out of the gate. And they're pretty much universal. So, you know, I have a little bit of a different opinion. I say that, you know, if it's a good shot and it's barely off, I'd probably count it as a green in regulation because I'm trying to acknowledge or judge the quality of the approach shot. And I don't care about the rigid, like PGA Tour quality stats. And it's probably the same thing if it was, you know, if I have a ball, it's a few inches off the fairway, but the drive was awesome. I'm trying to acknowledge that I hit a good drive. So when I go back, I feel like, all right, well, I drove the ball well today. I could ever actually look at my stats.
Let's keep these two separate because I have an opinion on both.
You do? Okay. So give me your take.
Here is, I think you said it best when you said stat tracking from an amateur perspective is only really relevant to that person. I mean, we aren't taking our iPads into the bar after the round to put on a display as to what our fairway greens putting percentages are over the last 20 rounds. That at least I don't think we are. If you are, then I'm definitely not having beers with you after we play.
Yeah, we're not fudging scores, and I'm not entering my hole by hole with stats in the gin or gin system, whatever you want to call it, but what we have, you know, the I'm not getting a bonus. I'm not manipulating my score in any way. That's not what I'm doing.
So here's where I'm stuck with the putter thing.
You're stuck.
Not the putter thing, the green in regulation. So right. I used Sky Golf for a long time, had an SGX, loved it, was obsessed with that like GPS based manipulation around the golf course to get my numbers up until I started seeing how easy it was to use a rangefinder. Either way, they have a great post-round system on Sky Golf where you can put your scores, whether you hit the fairway left, right, or X or whatever. And then the greens aren't really calculated. It calculates based on the number of putts you have that you make a note on each hole.
Yeah, I've used Golf Shot since like, I don't know, 2009, and it's the same way. Right?
So my question to you is, if you are inches off the green and consider it a green in regulation, when you're tracking your putts, do you track that stroke that you make with the putter at that point as a putt?
It would be tracked as a putt because of the app.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was going to be my point. I was defined by what Sky Golf allowed me to do. So if I was, and this is something that people debate all the time. If you putt from 5 feet off the green, the fairway, the fringe, whatever, is that considered a putt? I always defer to saying no, because I would only count the putts I would have on the putting surface, knowing that if I said my putt with from the fringe, it would assume that I hit the green.
Yes. And I know this is my thought process. Is it a judgment call? Yeah, it's a total judgment call. You know, I've had this week, for some reason, I hit two drives that were 270. I don't know where it came from, man. I don't know where it came from, but I bombed them. And they wound up in two places in fairways that were like a sliver of fairway was available and my ball was there. It had no business being in the fairway, you know, so it was kind of arbitrary. But hey, that's a fairway hit, right? So if that was 2 inches over on the rough and I still hit a, like, that was a phenomenal drive for me because it set up this nice little pitching wedge into this green that's always a pain in the ass, then I'm trying to use the stat to basically know that I hit a solid drive and I was on my game, you know, that day and for that particular drive. I'm not caring as much about, you know, oh, it's a missed fairway. Because you say missed fairway, isn't that bad? It should be bad. But if I'm 2 inches off the fairway, it's not bad at all. You know?
So if you're 2 inches off the fairway, what are you in?
That longer part of the fairway.
The first cut. The does COVID your course length. Does it have a second cut?
COVID
no.
length fairway.
So let's not.
All right. So here's my question. Here's my next question. You duck hook one because you're a good player. So you only hit draws.
Not true.
So you duck hook one. It hits.
You got to stop saying that, dude.
Sorry. Frozen rope.
Last time we talked about bunkers, I've never played in so many bunkers ever since I made the comment. You gassed me on it. Do not start talking about duck hooking. I'm not about to live that life.
I can admit, this is going to be...
All right, Rob, so you duck hook one.
This is going to be painful, but you'll be a better man for it.
You duck hook one, not me. You duck hook
one. All right, I duck hook one.
There we go.
I'm going to tell you what I... So,
are you asking if it hits a tree and bounces back in the fairway?
Yeah, hits a tree, bounces back in the fairway, 100 yards off the tee box. You count that as a fairway hit.
Rubber the green, bro.
You count it as a fairway hit.
Listen, for me, it's probably going to bounce back into the fairway and into a divot.
All right. What if you did that 14 times in a round?
I'm not a stat tracker, though.
You hit every fairway that day. You didn't get past 100 yards. And you hit a tree every single time. You bounce back in the fairway. So 100% of fairways that day, everything's good, nothing to work on?
If I was a stat tracker, I'd probably say yes. But I'm not. And here's the deal. This is my world. When I go in to the bar after the round and people say, how'd you hit it? And I would say, I drove the ball like garbage today. I don't need a percentage to tell me I drove it like garbage.
Or I golfed my ball. Golfed my ball that day.
Into the woods and back into the fairway.
I'm off my ball like garbage.
So there is one sample where I would strongly support what you're saying. And it's not fractions of an inch off the fairway into what you're unwillingly incapable of calling the rough. When you play through a dogleg, my ninth hole on my golf course is a par five. The fairway ends at a number that I'm not going to talk about, but it's decent.
Sure.
And I have a hard time if I hit a good drive and it hits the middle of the fairway and lumbers forward through the fairway, I would be more inclined to say that was a fairway hit. I would be more supportive of your logic.
Oh, so you're making a judgment call. You know,
it's a center perfectly struck drive that just happens to lumber through. That's hard. And if you look once again, I don't think a place like Sky Golf's input, they have a left, they have a right, and they have a miss. They don't have a long.
Yeah, and Golf Shot has it has a long, it has a short, it has a left and a right.
Okay.
Type of thing. So there are four options. There's not like, it's not like a Atari joystick where you've got like nine directions, you know, you can pick from, like, oh, I missed it in northwest quadrant or something. So you can't get that granular with it. It's kind of like how I've been used to tracking for the last, you know, 11 years or whatever's in there, but it's a judgment call. Now I completely admit I'm just using these stats to get, I want to get like the state of my game, you know, that's, and what I have to work on. So one of the things, like right now going back and forth on the forum, is we're talking about, all right, if you make that birdie putt, So I hit the, I'm 1 inch off the green, right? And I make that putt because I use a putter and I make that putt. You mark it as no putts.
Zero. Yep.
Zero putts.
You have to.
When you go back a year later, you're like, wow, that day, wow, that's pretty good. My short game's really good, you know, but you putted that ball from the Corona rough right there. So
Corona rough. We don't putt from the rough on this podcast. Get out of here.
Corona fringe, I should say. You putted that ball. It was a putt. You didn't mark it because you can't, but for all intents and purposes, the action was a putt. You're getting a bad view of the state of your short game. What if you do that all round? Oh, I had no putts today.
So I was going to ask, before you segued into fairways, I was going to ask you, what is more critical from a statistical standpoint for you? Greens hit or lowest number of putts?
When I look back on my rounds, like greens hit is difficult. Like that's the thing I always struggle with. Like if I can putt. So if I hit, the more greens I hit, the better off I am, regardless of the proximity. That's one thing I don't track is proximity to hole, right? It's like, it's something which takes extra effort and I don't really have time to do that type of stuff while I'm playing. So when I look back, I say, oh man, if I hit 70% of fairways and I wind up with 11% of greens in regulation, that's pretty crappy. But most of the time that's cut and dry, you know, green hit versus not green hit. You know, we've all had those weirdo events of where you putt from, you know, 20 feet off the green and it goes in. And I probably wouldn't count that as a putt. I'm way off the green. I have no business being there. You know, the previous shot, you know, frankly sucked. So I'm trying to get more of a state overall of how I'm kind of striking that ball for the round. Does that make any sense whatsoever?
It does, sort of.
Yeah. This is not, you know, that the on PGA Tour, the first putt is, I understand if the first putt is when the ball is resting on a green and you putt it, every other shot after that is considered a putt. So if you putted off the green into a bunker and had to hit a bunker shot, that's a putt according to PGA Tour stats, which is ridiculous.
Only time that would ever happen is Phil Mickelson at a US Open. So,
well, I think Tiger was 97, like, putted off the green on the front nine when he shot that 40. Like he literally putted into the water or something.
Well, Phil wasn't letting it happen either. But my point of asking that was when I was actually consistently keeping my stats on that app, I didn't get the choice to mark them both. So I couldn't say it was a green in regulation or it was not a green in regulation, but I had two putts. I had to pick one or the other, right? I was either putting or it was a green in regulation. Or not a green regulation. So for me, I always deferred to the not purely because I want the lowest number of putts per round. That is the only stat I care about.
That's your stat.
That is my stat. Yeah. Okay.
So it's like you're doing it to satisfy a requirement, like a stat requirement.
A mental Canadanian stat requirement is. Yeah, I cannot tolerate a lot of putts.
I mean, I got you. I understand that. What I'm trying to say when I make that judgment call is like, hey, this was just as good as a green in regulation. The chances are I am not aiming for a nice little quadrant below the hole. I'm just trying to hit this damn green on the right side, you know, the correct side. And have a decent shot at my putt. And if it's just a little bit off, and I will say maybe I'm manipulated a little bit because there are two greens at my course that I play the majority of the time that are just absolutely ridiculous. Like you will never wind up, like it's so hard on our 17th green to even wind up on the green. It's just not, it just slopes so severely left to right. And it's a real big uphill approach. So, that one, you're never on the green, and I won't call it a green in regulation or anything because I'm way off, you know, like it goes through the, what do you call it? Fringe, right? Fringe.
Yeah. Fringe.
Fringe. It goes like
the tech term.
It will almost, these terms are awesome today. It'll wind up almost in the rough, you know, it's like that far, it's that severe slope. So, I'm making a judgment call that just basically says that was just as good as a green regulation. And, you know, I just want to know, hey, am I hitting better? Cause I'm telling you, man, I looked twice in the last 10 rounds and I hit 6% of the greens in regulation twice. So I went back to my steel shaft experiment. So from the steel fibers. And so I'm like, nah, this isn't good. I think that showed me, that I'm not hitting my irons the way I should be.
Well, I think that that takes us down our final street on the road to Rob Miller's head. We have completely understood his game, the mental aspect anyway. If you want a live look at his stat tracking, bother him on Twitter at Rob Miller Time. If you want,
I'd love to share my Greensboro. One of the things that just, you know, I get a bowl of Werther's Original and put on a cardigan and just tell you stories.
If you do have any thoughts for us, please share them with us on social media. As mentioned, at Canadan Golf, at Off Course THP. We also have a discussion every week on the THP forum. If you'd like to join us over there, it's a wonderful community of golfers who are like-minded and just enjoy talking to other golfers as opposed to their wives. So be sure to join us there. And Rob, anything else before next week?
Yeah, I got to call in Slugger White here, little rules official. We forgot to mention, we're going to do another giveaway. So congrats to our giveaway winner. You can see it on Twitter. We're going to do another giveaway soon. So make sure that you follow us at Off Course THP, easy for you to say, on Twitter and Instagram.
All right. Rob, play well this weekend, buddy.
All GIRs, baby.
No putts.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.